Well, the corporate media, of course, is covering the protests on college campuses across the United States. Some of them are covering the Israeli bombing of Rafah overnight and the slaughtering of civilians. But almost none of them, I can't find any American corporate media that is covering the hundreds of thousands of Israelis who are pouring onto the streets of Tel Aviv to protest Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, calling for his removal from power, and they're calling for a ceasefire. This is Israel. This is Tel Aviv. Journalist Dan Cohen is probably the only one covering this. He tweeted this a short time ago. If Israel agrees to the ceasefire, then Ben-Gvir and Smotrich will collapse the Netanyahu government and unprecedented upheaval in Israeli society will begin. Israel's gigantic internal rift, temporarily papered over by the trauma of October 7th and the war on Gaza, will exacerbate to new levels, potentially collapsing the state of Israel. So it appears that Dan, as one of the only Western media journalists actually covering this story, and Dan Cohen joins us now from Uncaptured Media. Dan, great to see you. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Clayton.
So it appears, Dan, that the media in the West doesn't want us to see these massive protests in Tel Aviv against Netanyahu. I mean, let's start there. No coverage of this. I turn on Lester Holt on the NBC Nightly News. You turn on the CBS. There's no coverage of the tens of thousands of people that are protesting Netanyahu in his own country.
Yeah, there's a massive internal divide in Israeli society that is basically ignored in the Western media. Nobody wants to talk about it. And I mean, that divide existed even before the events of October 7th, before this horrific war on Gaza. Last summer, in the summer of 2023, there were massive protests, largely by the same sort of class of people, liberals from Tel Aviv and that area, who were protesting against the judicial, what they called the judicial coup, the basically neutering of the Supreme Court in Israel and handing of basically all power to the Knesset. And the Times of Israel reported, I believe, that 28% of Israelis were considering leaving the country permanently. So it was already, wow, the government was, the whole state of Israel, the Zionist project, was in a state of crisis before October 7th. And that speaks to the divide between the kind of Zionist left, if we can call it that, and the Zionist right. The Zionist left that wants to have sort of real politic and maybe a sort of permanent occupation and manage the conflict, and the Zionist right, which is more powerful, that wants genocide, ethnic cleansing of all the Palestinians, get rid of all of them. And that has been existing, once basically a total theocracy. Now, October 7th just poured a huge amount of gas on that fire. It basically upended the entire paradigm because, you know, the whole idea of we can permanently occupy these people was discredited. Now, you could say it's discredited from a, you know, human perspective and say, well, you can't do that. Not only is it's wrong to do, but it's also not going to work. Or you can say the right-wing perspective, you can take the right-wing Zionist perspective and say, well, you can't do that because you have your enemies just on the other side of that line, and they're going to plot to try to kill you, which is also true in a sense. So the kind of centrist big lie has totally been discredited. And I think that's really what's at the heart of what's going on here.
So this giant internal rift, as you point out, papered over temporarily by October 7th, this rallying around of, you know, so everyone raising the Israeli flag, of course, and the atrocities that we saw that day, and then the rallying of support to go after Hamas and end this once and for all. Now we're starting to see the rift once again. You say that the Netanyahu government will likely collapse if this ceasefire moves forward. Can you explain why? Why, if Netanyahu gives in, I guess, to the ceasefire agreement, which is now it seems like it's in place, however, Rafah is still being bombed, we can talk about that, that Netanyahu will be thrown out, and this is the collapse of his government?
Well, as soon as the news was reported from Al Jazeera that Hamas had accepted the ceasefire proposal that was brokered by the Qataris and Egyptians, and apparently with knowledge of the United States, of course, then the onus is on Israel. What is Netanyahu going to do? And the Netanyahu war cabinet was scheduled to meet. But even before that, they started bombing Rafah. So their answer was very clear, even though it hasn't even been I don't think officially rejected. It's obvious the Israelis invaded. They took over the Rafah crossing. So that, you know, the actions are make it completely clear. And I don't think Netanyahu at any point will be willing to agree to a ceasefire, because if he does, well, what will happen? Itamar Ben-Gvir, the national security minister, and Bezalel Smotrich, the finance minister, have said they will pull out of the government and it will collapse his cabinet. So then Israel goes to elections. Who knows what kind of government comes out of that? But really what happens then is the big lie that Israel can defeat Hamas and get the captives back is all exposed. I mean, since the beginning, Netanyahu has put out two contradictory goals. One, defeat Hamas. It's never been able to do that. It can kill a lot of civilians. It can drop a lot of bombs. It can cause all kinds of atrocities. But Hamas has the trump card in the tunnels. And it's been planning this for years and years and years, knowing exactly what Israeli capabilities are. And on the other side, Israel says, we're going to use military force to get the captives back. Those are two totally contradictory goals. And he's basically speaking out of both sides of his mouth to the kind of two main camps of Israeli society, lying to both of them. So if he agrees to a ceasefire, Itamar Ben-Gvir pulls out, Bezalel Smotrich pulls out, then the big lie is exposed, and the Israelis who want the captives back, who are demonstrating in the streets, they're gonna be after him. And then his base of support that he has rode to prominence, and he rode to prominence in the 90s, the settler movement and religious Zionism, and that has kept him in power most of the time since the mid-90s, for what, you know, most of 30 years, they are going to be after his head too, because they're going to say, you were supposed to exterminate Gaza, we're supposed to wipe all those people out, expel them into Egypt, whatever other countries, and build settlements there, and you lied. So first, you have Netanyahu, who has his corruption scandals, he's facing indictments that... that's all on pause as long as the war goes on. And then so that's one level of it. Then you have basically the big lie of Zionism providing security, of the whole Netanyahu paradigm of, you know, we're going to keep Gaza down, we're going to permanently occupy them, same with the West Bank, and that will work, and that will just work forever. But obviously it does not. You cannot keep your boot on someone's neck permanently, especially as, you know, you become complacent and you privatize different parts of the military and you want it to be a smart military. And eventually that person who you are keeping down is going to figure out your weakness and is going to make a big move to attack you and change the situation. And that's what happened on October 7th. And as soon as that truth becomes clear to enough of the Israeli public, then Netanyahu is finished. So he will never agree to a ceasefire, as I see it.
I mean, it seems right, right? Why would he agree to a ceasefire? The war gives him cover, right? He's allowed to use sort of war powers, the indictments that are against him, the criminality, the criminal indictments that are basically held in status. It's like, we'll go after you legally once this war is done. He's like, well, great, well, I'm going to keep the war going. I mean, even if Gaza is ethnically cleansed and pushed out, I've seen, of course, analysts pointing to the fact that, well, Lebanon would be next, right? I mean, this is not just an end to it in Gaza. This would be continued on so Netanyahu remains in some sort of power, right?
Yeah, and I think that's where we could see really the split. Because obviously Netanyahu and Israel, broadly speaking, is completely dependent on the United States for military support, for diplomatic and political support. And, you know, Netanyahu has said, okay, Hamas's command and control center is under Al-Shifa Hospital, and they attacked Al-Shifa and committed atrocities there. It wasn't there. They said, Hamas is under Khan Yunis. They went to Khan Yunis. Hamas wasn't, you know, they couldn't do anything there. Oh, now they say they're under Rafah. So it's basically the last place in Gaza that they can claim that they've, you know, we've conquered the other areas, even though they haven't actually defeated Hamas as a military command structure in any of those places. The command structure, and I'm not talking about a guerrilla resistance of all disparate cells. I'm talking about where in one part of Gaza, the leadership can give an order for another, for militants in another part to carry out an attack, an operation. They can guide it and tell them exactly what to do. That all still stands. So once Israel has, you know, finished with its lies in Rafah, then what's next? As you said, it's Hezbollah in Lebanon. And the U.S., the Biden administration, and I think the Pentagon overall, regardless of who's president, does not want to get into a war with Hezbollah because that means war with Iran. And when Israel attacked the Iranian embassy in Damascus a few weeks ago, and then Iran attacked, had a counterattack, the Biden administration told Israel, take the victory. You got to attack them back again. But we're not going to enter into a war. We're not going to support strikes on Lebanon. We're not going to do that. So that, I think, that's where we start to see a little bit of daylight between the Israeli and the U.S. positions. And as Israel inevitably, again, attempts to escalate on that front, which, you know, its leadership sees as an inevitability, and its think tanks, they all say, you know, Hezbollah has to be wiped out. I mean, how can you, according to their logic, how can you have this military force right on the other side of that border that wants to, you know, that rejects you? How can you let them exist? So when that escalates again, I think you're going to see more and more daylight between the U.S. and Israeli positions. And that's where, you know, there's a possibility of somehow Israel being forced to accept a ceasefire, some kind of change in the U.S.-Israeli relationship, because that is what is making all of this possible.
Yeah, so then all of the Palestinians in Rafah wiped out and killed, so they have nothing else to say that they're here now in Rafah. So they clean out totally. Then they move on to Hezbollah, and then, of course, then it becomes war with Iran, and the United States will say, okay, either, you know, you have Senator Lindsey Graham, of course, who would love to do that, would love to go to war with Iran. You have a bunch of neocons that would love to do that. But I think the cooler heads might hopefully prevail, because we would lose a war with Iran very clearly. This is unbelievable where this is all heading. I mean, I have friends and sources in Tel Aviv, downtown Tel Aviv, sending me videos from their buildings, like looking at the tens of thousands of people on the streets down below telling us Netanyahu is finished. But again, the Western media won't cover this story at all. Dan Cohen from Uncaptured Media. I encourage all of you to check out his great reporting. Follow him on X. He is one of the clearest, most sensible voices on what's happening there right now. Dan, great to see you.
Great to see you, Clayton.
I really hope you enjoyed watching this video. You know, YouTube thinks that you'll actually like this next video right here. It's personalized based on your own viewing habits. So if you watch the video, please leave a comment. Let us know what you think about it. And we will see you next time, everyone.